Gang, I'm joined today by Jodie Stevens, one of the fastest rising stars in Irish powerlifting. Unfortunately, you may know her name for her recent ban with the International Powerlifting Federation. We're going to get into Jodie's background and what brought her into the sport, but then also into the story that unfolded between April and July 2023. Make sure you listen closely to this one. Jodie Stevens on the Iron Mindset podcast. You're very, very welcome.
Thank you.
So there's obviously going to be a lot of people clicking in to listen to this or watch this one for numerous reasons. But for maybe a couple of people that are listeners that have not heard of you or seen you lift before, let's hear a little bit about your background. How did Jodie Stevens find herself in powerlifting?
Well, always been involved in sport since a very, very young age. I don't even remember starting sport. Honestly, see, if you listed any sport under the sun, I've probably tried it. Mm-hmm. Every single sport. My mom is very into the gym and into fitness. She teaches classes and stuff, so I suppose she probably got me into the gym. Mm-hmm. Been training in the gym since I was about 15, 16. Then got my PT cert when I was 18. And that's when I started solely focusing on strength. Didn't start powerlifting until I was, what age was I, 20. So for that 2 years, I was training sort of like a powerlifter and a bodybuilder in one, but didn't realize I was doing it. And then somebody literally just said to me one day, why don't you try a powerlifting competition? You'd be really good at it. I was like, never thought of it. Went on that night, booked one for 6 weeks later, I think it was. Won it. And I was like, oh, I'm okay. I'm actually okay at this. Yeah, that's how I got into powerlifting.
So you grew up in a household surrounded by fitness, essentially.
What
was it like for you then when you got into the gym? Because this is probably something a lot of people can resonate with. Like, you're still quite young, but got into the gym quite young as well. What was it like going into the gym for the very first time, if you can remember?
I don't think I was ever scared to go to the gym. I know a lot of people would be a bit afraid of stepping into the gym. I think because I was so used to it, you know, sometimes going to work with mom, she always was in a gym environment. It was easy for me to sort of start it. But honestly, see, if you look back at some of the things I was doing when I was 15, it was go to the gym, walk on the treadmill for half an hour, do a core circuit and leave.
I mean, at least you're still in the building.
Yeah.
You know, I'd much rather try and get somebody, you know, from the treadmill to the weight room than from the couch to the gym, you know? But did you have something that drew you towards strength specifically when you started training? Because you started strength training, you said, about 18 or so. So
yeah.
What drew you?
I think, I'm not actually sure. I've always been very strong. I know I've always been strong. I've always had the physique of somebody who would be very strong. And just trying things out. I just really, really enjoyed it. I'm very, very competitive. So when I found out that I was good at something, I'm gonna dive straight into it.
Time to win a few medals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think having that varied background of trying all these different sports has played to your advantage then with powerlifting? Because you probably realize this yourself, a lot of powerlifters, many of whom may have played one sport, a lot of them played rugby, but there's a whole cohort of people that have gotten into it over the last couple of years that have never played any sports. So do you think because you've got this great sporting background and from a young age, it played to your benefit then?
Absolutely. Especially in a competition environment, I'm used to going to play hockey matches. I played hockey. I swam quite competitively. So I'm used to sort of individual and team competitions. I think the competition environment, it is very overwhelming for a lot of people. So for me to have background in that, I quite use it to my advantage. Mm-hmm. I quite like the adrenaline that you get and see the nerves and everything. I love it. I feed off it. It's amazing. So I quite enjoy that. And I think that's probably one of the things that really helped. Like doing past sports, then going into powerlifting, and also just base strength, like swimming, hockey, a horse. I ride horses as well. So having all that base strength definitely helped in some sort of way.
I would definitely say so. Even for your body to have been moved around in all these different directions and loaded in all these different ways, I think is definitely going to have a crossover, maybe not directly to weight on the bar, but your ability to learn, pick things up. And as you said, you've been in that competition environment dozens of times before you ever started in powerlifting. So even from the the mental side, which is a big part of it for most people, is being able to stay switched on, stay in the zone, and as you mentioned, be competitive. And I think what you mentioned there about feeding off the environment, I think is huge, because there's this expression you hear sometimes people say, or to say, oh, I can't compete. I'm too competitive to compete. If I don't win, I won't be happy. It's like, well, that's not really what competitiveness is. Competitive is, like you said, feeding off the environment, being driven to succeed through testing yourself at competitions, which you obviously found a love for with powerlifting.
Yeah.
Do you remember what your first competition was?
In general or powerlifting?
In powerlifting.
Yes, it was a NIPF competition in Reform, where I train now, in September 2021.
Oh, wow. So still quite new to the sport.
2 years into it.
And in that very short period of time, you've made a really great name for yourself. You've placed very highly at a lot of competitions. And have you gone internationally? Am I right in saying
yep.
you have? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I knew I'd seen a picture of you somewhere. And wires got crossed for a second. You have done extremely well in that 2 or so years you've been around the sport. In that time then that you've been in powerlifting, what do you think it was? Because there's this, I don't know if you've ever listened, I did an episode before with Jake Brennan, and he said there's a thing in powerlifting called pop culture powerlifters, or poppies, right? So it's basically people, the first 18 months, it goes great. And then, you know, they fall off because it starts getting difficult. You've obviously broken through that period of time. What do you think is like keeping you in the sport? What is it that you keep coming back for?
Honestly, I think it's just because I'm good at it. Honestly.
Yeah.
And I'm scared if I stop, I'll lose all the strength in a way. I found something I really, really enjoy training. And as much as the training is so long, sometimes I don't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the period there between probably July and last month, I didn't really enjoy my training.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're not constantly hitting newbie PBs, it does get difficult. It's not as easy, but always training towards something helps me. So if I have a competition in the future, if it's in 8 weeks, if it's in 12 weeks, if it's, I don't know, 6 months down the line, as long as I have that in my head, I have to train towards something. I don't know how anybody's in the sport just training.
Mm-hmm.
That would bore the life out of me.
Yeah.
I need something to work towards.
Yeah, I say this to people when they're saying like, oh, would you not call yourself a powerlifter if you don't compete? I'm like, why would you want to? Like, you know, there's loads of different ways you can train to take half the time and get you way more tangible results, like in how you look and things like that. It's like, if you're going to be a powerlifter, you may as well have a platform to work towards.
Yeah.
So just, I want to ask actually a little bit about, you mentioned that you're a qualified trainer.
Yep.
So you're a qualified coach.
Mm-hmm.
You still coach people to this day, I'm right.
Yeah.
And you, do you do like a massage therapy or pain therapy as well?
Sports therapy, yeah.
So you're very firmly entrenched in the fitness world. How do you like coaching people? What have been some of your experiences there?
I've always enjoyed coaching people. It was probably before lockdown, I put on a lot of weight. I put on about 2.5 stone. So I went through my whole own weight loss journey.
Mm-hmm.
And see, helping people through that. That's majority of the people that I take are general public, looking to lose weight, looking to get stronger. But the clients who come to me for technique and to get strong, they're my favorites. The people who come to me for weight loss, I still love them, and I empathize for them because I went through that too. But I do prefer people who are like, I just want to get really strong. Like, let's do it.
It's like two different ends of like a bell curve, I think, because you've got the people that come in for the weight loss and it's that headset reefing you.
Yeah.
At the moment. You can my take it off and
small.
Move around. I have the opposite problem. I have to have it on the max because I have this massive melon head. But like I've coached people for years as well, and I completely empathize with that position you're saying. I feel the same. I'll get like, you know, your general population. They just come in. It's usually something based around an aesthetic. You know, I want to lose a few pounds before a holiday, or, you know, I want to get myself back in shape after, you know, whatever, having the kids, or I let, you know, a summer run into a year, into 2 years, and now I'm just trying to get rid of spare tire. These are great people. I actually find you have the great chats with those people.
Yeah.
They're very much bought into your process. They're very trusting, and they tend to say like they owe a lot of the positives from their outcomes to you, which is fantastic, and it's nice, and it gives you the warm fuzzies. But I think from like to actually get your coach's brain switched on, you need those people that are so driven, and it's a complete other end. They are not looking at these very like basic, I just want to be fit and healthy. These are like, oh no, I want to be like ridiculously strong for a person. Like, I don't just want to be regular person strong. I want to be like ridiculously so strong at a deadlift or a squat or a bench. And I want you to show me how.
Yep.
That's way more fun. Like, let me figure you out now. Let's see what we can do with you. So you're coaching people as well. What got you into the therapy side then? What was the attraction there?
Always been interested in it. I applied to go to university to do physiotherapy and sports therapy. Mm. The school that I went to, it was very pushed towards uni. Didn't really give you any other options, to be honest. Mm. Didn't talk about becoming self-employed. Didn't talk about gap years. Didn't talk about traveling. Nothing like that. So I was forced to apply to uni. I had 5 offers. I declined every single one of them. I dragged my poor mum over to Newcastle upon Tyne, to Birmingham, to Leeds, to loads of different universities across the sea. And I was like, no, don't want to go. I felt like the 3 or 4 or 5 years that you spend in university, I felt like they were going to be wasted on me. I just wanted to get stuck straight into working and building myself up within the industry, because I knew the pathway you can take that isn't university. So I started off doing my PT course. I've done loads of different classes, courses and everything, all that there sort of stuff. My mum set aside a fund for me for university. So I just used that and did all my courses privately. Mm. I just was not interested in university. So then the place that I did my PT search, she specialized in sports massage therapy. So I ate that up, basically. I did my level 3. I then did my level 4. I've done cupping, dry needling, all that there sort of stuff as well. So this sports therapy is definitely the thing that I'd be more interested in. Mm. I really enjoy learning about the body and how the body works. Very fascinating. So it's definitely something that I'm more interested in, but I also love having coaching on the side because it splits it up.
Let me actually ask you, because this is an area of the industry that I remember when I first ever qualified, I was in the same boat. I was thinking about that, like sports therapy, massage therapy. Would I do this as like an add-on? And inevitably, I just said, you know what, I'm going to focus on the coaching first. That's gone really well. But every now and then I do think about, like, would that be even just as like a very indirect benefit to coaching? Have you found the two of them work well together?
Yeah, definitely. Because if I'm coaching somebody and even like their movement patterns and stuff, you get a bigger depth into how they move and why this does this and why you should be doing this instead of this and what works best for people, basically. Because obviously everybody's built differently. Not everybody can squat ass to grass, and there's different reasons for it. So it's nice to have that knowledge behind you, because it helps. It definitely helps within the coaching.
Yeah.
100% helps.
So would you ever see yourself going the full physiotherapy route, or are you kind of happy with the current setup you've got?
I'm happy right now where I am, but I always have room for more.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like, as you mentioned, dragging your mom all over the place, all these different colleges and things like that. It sounds like you kind of knew what you wanted to do, which in its own way is quite refreshing, because there's a lot of people that come out of secondary school who are like, I don't know, just go on the piss for the summer. Like, it sounds like you're very highly motivated and driven towards these specific goals and achieving them. And it sounds like, as you said, you had a fund put aside for your education and you've used it quite well. You're working away, you're busy. So I think your man will agree that's been quite a good success.
Absolutely.
So turning things back towards your powerlifting career, many people listening may be aware we have the Irish PF down here in the south, and up north you have the Northern Irish Powerlifting Federation, NIPF. Mm-hmm. And you did your first couple of competitions in the NIPF.
Yeah, first two.
Mm. And then there was a period of time then where you made the decision to come and lift in the Irish PF instead. Now, I want to know more about your reasons for making that choice, but just as a general overview for somebody who lives up north and made the decision to lift in the Irish PF, what would be some of the differences? If somebody's listening and they're asking this question and they don't know, what would be the differences between lifting in NIPF versus Irish PF?
I think the NIPF is very good for starting out for anybody that is new to powerlifting, who's just looking at fun and easy competition. It's very good for people starting out. But if you have aspirations of going international, or you just want to compete to a higher standard, or you want to compete with more people, there's a lot more people in the Irish Federation. the NIPF wouldn't be, the competitions wouldn't be as big and busy. So if you have any of those sort of aspirations, you either have to go Irish or Great British. If you live in the north, obviously you have the chance of going Great British as well.
Yeah.
But I went Irish because of the standard. Mm-hmm. I followed a lot of people that lifted in the Irish Federation already. I knew of people, I hadn't met any of them, but I followed a lot of people on Instagram. It was mostly Instagram that drove me towards it. The competitions looked amazing and got chatting to a few people, specifically Jane Jones, actually, because she was the 63 lifter at the time when I sort of just started powerlifting. I was like, oh, she's got to compete for Ireland. That's amazing. And I was like, I wonder if I move there, would I be able to compete for Ireland too? So I would have chatted on and off with her, and she was like, Jody, you need to get to the Irish Federation. There's records sitting here that you can break, and you've, well, I only competed twice at this stage. And yeah, competitiveness again. I was like, I need to go. Need to.
So basically, I would also completely true statement. Jane worked very hard and got her Team Aira singlet. I had Jane on the podcast a couple of months, but that was actually like right after Nationals. And I remember coming in and thinking like, oh, we're both going to be bollocks after that weekend. But it was she was great to talk to as well. And I'm really happy she talked you into coming down as well. But it's so bizarre to me because I remember when Jane was just starting, and to think that you started then after her shows like you're still like so new to the sports, or your potential is like monumental, which is really great to think about like for the future. But so if I'm right in saying this, if you lift in the NIPF, your pathways are either come down and join the Irish PF and go international this way representing Ireland, or you have to travel across to Great Britain to lift with Team GB. So even I'd imagine from a logistics standpoint, it makes sense to come here if you're just looking practically. But for you, it was that there was people here you wanted to lift with and against, and the standard of competition was really high, and the competition presentation is excellent, which it is. Also helps the singlet's pretty cool. Like, you know, the singlet's nice. So what was your first Irish PF competition?
Junior Nationals.
All right, talk me through it.
I actually bought my ticket when I was in Paris watching my mum run the marathon, and it was literally the most stressful day of my life. And it was actually Jane. She was like, Jodie, these tickets have went on sale. You need to go, you need to get one. And I was like refreshing. Thankfully got one. And then it was, when was it? May 2022, I think it was May 2022, Junior Nationals, down in City Gym.
City Gym it was, I was spotting and loading at it.
I actually, you're in a couple of my pictures that I have from it. So yes, it was that one, and nobody really knew me, which was quite nice. It's nice coming into an environment where you were like the, what do you call that sort of saying? You were the...
Like the dark horse, the mystery.
So I remember opening on the junior squat record. I was like, this is class. Like, people have no idea what I'm about to do here. And yeah, it was a great competition. Stayed in Limerick the whole weekend. It was class. And that,
the City Gym boys know how to party.
Oh, it was unreal. It was unreal. But yeah, so competed in Junior Nationals, won the under 63s, then got my invite for Worlds from that competition.
And then, so that's a pretty big, like, you know, you're like, ah, maybe I'll toddle on down here and do an Irish PF meet and, you know, turn a few heads, and sure, then you're on the roller coaster now, you're international. What was that like?
Unbelievable. Really surreal. Like, I learned a lot from it, especially like weight cutting and stuff as well. See, running up to competitions, normally I'd sit maybe a kilo over, something like that. Very, very easy to get off. See, competing internationally and not having normal foods, normal temperatures, normal routine, it changes quite a lot. See, if I compete internationally again, I will be bringing a whole separate suitcase for food and normal food. And yeah, it's very strange, actually. See, going from City Gym competing at Junior Nationals, it was like loud music and everybody's screaming and shouting, and the gym was packed. I know it's small, but it was packed.
Yeah,
it
the crowd's right on top of you.
The atmosphere was amazing. Then going to sit in a conference sort of room in Turkey with not very many people, no music, no nothing. It was a bit strange. I definitely prefer like nationals competitions rather than international, but getting to compete on the international stage is, it's amazing. It's it's something that I've ticked off my bucket list of being able to compete for my country. And yeah.
It's something you earned.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you worked hard to get there, but I'd imagine it was that, you know, you did your couple of domestic competitions back up north, came down for a bit of a more high profile meet with junior nationals, and then to be lifting on that stage, it moved quite quickly.
Yeah.
But obviously really cemented your love or commitment and passion for powerlifting as a sport. But that's not to say you have a lot of other things that you've done. As we mentioned, your whole childhood coming up, you've participated in many other different sports. With your own coach, and I know we're kind of pivoting away here, but just wanted to ask while it's on my mind. We were talking very briefly before. I'm a huge advocate for cardio with powerlifters. As somebody who has been around sport essentially your whole life, and now that you're fully entrenched in powerlifting, but you still do dip your toe into other aspects. I know you've done like a little bit of CrossFit, you do a little bit of hydrox training, am I right? Is that what it's called?
Ish.
Cool, hydrox-ish. But still, you've dipped your toe into some other aspects of training. What would you think most powerlifters are missing out on that could benefit them as a coach?
Endurance. Honestly, it helps with your recovery massively. I'm not having to wait 8 to 10 minutes between each set. Yes, it's different if it's top sets and very, very heavy. Mm-hmm. You have to train sort of competition specific, but a normal training session for me that's more so like accessories and stuff, I can get it done within 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. I can bang through it. Most other people can't do that. And it's genuinely because they cannot recover quick enough. Mm-hmm. Plus, I feel healthy. Mm-hmm. I feel great. See, if I wanted to, I could go out and run 10K if I wanted to. Don't have to, but I could.
The capability is there.
See, if I was somebody who couldn't do that, I would probably go insane. You wouldn't feel great. You just wouldn't feel great. You just feel healthy.
Do you think some of it comes down to the way you were brought up though as well? Because you're like, your mom's obviously very, you mentioned she was running a marathon in France. She's obviously pretty good at it, like, you know. So you've been brought up in this, I'd imagine, like, diet quality, food quality's been good your whole life. You've obviously been fit and healthy. So I'd imagine, like, for you, that's like this non-negotiable standard. I want to be really strong, but I also want to be healthy, capable, competent person and all these other different things. And I do agree. I do think more powerlifters, I think not just powerlifters, I think most people that go to the gym, like that, like the meatheads, would do better doing that extra little bit of cardio. Do you have like go-to things you would coach people to do? Like, do you have a go-to cardio thing that you have them do? I like making people do a lot of bike erg personally.
Yeah, I do like a bike because it isn't as harsh as the likes of running. I am not a huge fan of running. I'm forced to run right now because we're doing this stupid race in December. But just for a joint perspective, I am not a huge fan of running, especially road running. But see the likes of the bike erg, the rower, the assault bike, all that sort of machinery, it's definitely a lot better. I would recommend, even on like your rest day, see, just jumping on it for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Not going mad, but even 30 minutes, it will benefit you for throughout the whole week.
So when you're, say for yourself, when you're like, let's say 12, 10, 8, 6, 4 weeks out, what's your cardio routine look like?
I would do a higher intensity cardio day once a week, normally towards the start of the week, because all my heavy stuff would be at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walk every day. Walking is like this secret thing that people underrate so much. I walk every single day. And then if I'm not too close to a competition, I quite like to do a second cardio day, but it would be sort of more steady state. It isn't killing yourself cardio. The gym I work out of in Castlewellan, it is mostly a CrossFit gym. It's an open gym. You can go and do whatever you want, but I would say probably about 70% of the people that go there do CrossFit or Hyrox or some form of that training. So see, being around that 24/7, it's quite hard not to dive into it. So I've learned a lot around that style of training from working in there, and I just alter it depending on my training. So say if I'm peaking and I have a RP at plus single at the end of the week, I'm not gonna bust myself mm-hmm. in a cardio session on a Tuesday, I will go easier, but I'm still going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to do it, but just not destroy myself.
Would you see yourself competing in something like a CrossFit, competition down the road?
Yeah, well, yeah. I competed with one of my friends in 2021 in a competition, and it was so enjoyable. Mm. We ended up winning it, actually. And then
starting to see a trend here, Jody.
Yeah, and then I went with a group. There was a group of six of us that went to the Turf Games that was in Dublin in the summertime. There's a group of six of us from my gym that I work out of that went down there, and no expectations. It was just a bit of fun. End up coming third out of I don't know how many teams. I was like, this is class. Mm. So yes, those sort of competitions. I think powerlifting competitions are more exciting, mm-hmm. but I still see just the whole competing in general. Mm. I just really enjoy competing.
So spinning it back then, talking more about your competition career. So you've competed at Worlds. Mm-hmm. What was next? Jody pulls up her own open powerlifting here to see what the next competition was.
I didn't compete the whole rest of that year. That was last year. Yes, I took a break up until Open Nationals in February.
In the Radisson, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you feel about competing in a hotel?
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was really nice. Far better. Just, it was so much more open. You weren't cramped in the warm-up room. It was a lot more chilled, but in a good way. Mm. It wasn't, obviously the atmosphere was still amazing and people jumping up onto their chairs and screaming and shouting. It was class, but definitely a lot better.
Hot water in the taps was quite
nice. Absolutely. And lovely toilets.
Yeah.
But, and also I obviously don't live in Dublin. I'm about an hour and a half away. So being able to stay in Dublin the night before in the same hotel that you're competing in, it was luxury. It was amazing.
Yeah, we were there just a couple of weekends ago for the Christmas qualifier, and they leveled it up from Open Nationals. They extended out the warm-up room a bit more, so there's way more space. They built like this rig around the platform, and there was like all these lights attached to it. It was a lot of the boys from Phenom, Ken and the boys, they set all that up and they did a really excellent job with it. And because there wasn't as much space, the crowd felt more on top of the action. But then SPD had this big setup down the back where they were selling these new 10 millimeter belts and all. I don't know what all that's about, but that's nothing to do with us. But they had a great setup. The lads are really sound from SPD Ireland. They had all their bits and pieces there on sale. So it felt like a much bigger step up from there. And I would agree. I think Open Nationals was it's fantastic to see meets moving out of gyms.
Yeah,
the gyms do great, and I think they're grand for regional level bits and pieces, or like, you know, in-house meets, or like the way abs do abs teens and things like that. That's all fine, but I think for like your bigger, like, you know, your junior nationals, masters nationals, open nationals, I think it's great to have those brought up that extra little level, so like you said, lifters like yourself can stay in the place that they're going to be lifting, which I think is huge. But open nationals first in the Radisson, I think. I actually think I got the hookup for that. I think I put them onto that. Can't remember. I remember talking to Jay at the time. There was a lady when I used to work in FlyFit, I got talking to, and she worked there. And I think that might have been it. I'm just probably taking credit for something I didn't do. Like, I didn't actually sign anything or set anything up or pay for anything, but I'm just going to take credit. That was all me.
Yeah.
And I'll say it again on this podcast, because I say it all the time. That was my rack that we all used.
Was it?
Yeah, that's my rack. Yeah, it's a couple of my plates as well, a couple of my bars in the warm room, but it is what it is.
Well, that's a lucky rack.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed that competition. It was probably my best competition to date and probably my favorite competition to date. So. Mm.
You did really well that day.
I did. Yeah, it was probably the best competition that I've had.
And there's that one picture of it's you and Jordan and me just flexing in the back.
Yes.
Whatever the hell I'm doing. So I think I was sitting talking to Jake Brennan. But you had an excellent day out there. But then you had a really quick turnaround on meets, and you were then lifting at Junior Nationals in April. How many weeks was between those?
From what I remember, I think there was only six weeks or something like that. I actually didn't want to do Junior Nationals. I was trying to get around, like, getting the international invite without having to do it. Mm. I was told that the priority was Junior Nationals. If you want to lift as a junior lifter on an international stage, you have to compete at Junior Nationals. Mm-hmm. I was like, right, fair enough. So the plan was just to go out and get the qualifying total. I think the qualifying total was 430. for the A standard for the juniors, and like I totaled 4:55 at Open Nationals. So the plan was just to get the qualifying total 9 for 9 day, but then I got too competitive. I was chasing records and stuff again. So
yeah, that was in abs, I believe, as well. A couple of lads lifting at that. Yeah, that was another really good meet. But I think the quick turnaround though, that must have been stressful enough, the 6 weeks, particularly if it was a meet you weren't really hyper motivated to do. So you were hoping that your efforts at Open Nationals would qualify you for all the junior meets, international meets, but they were saying the priority would go to the people that lifted at Junior Nationals.
Yeah.
So what was the prep like between them? Like even those quick 6 week turnaround, like what changed for you in those 6 weeks?
It wasn't too stressful. I didn't do a full peak again. The heaviest squat I did was like 7.5 kilos below my max or something like that, which in terms of the weight that I'm lifting, it wasn't too heavy. But I actually went on holiday the day after Open Nationals because it was already booked. And I was like, right, this is just my deload week. I'm just going to go and do whatever. I ended up putting like 2 kilo on holiday. And I was like, oh no. So, it was all water weight, so it all came off me, no bother. That was the only thing that was slightly more stressful, was because I knew in the back of my head I was going away, it was going to be an eating, it was going to be a drinking holiday. So that was the only thing that was sort of stressful. Everything else, training was grand. It was just training to like RP it, basically.
And then when you look back then at your Open Nationals prep, you say Open Nationals was probably like your best ever meet. Did you change anything in that prep? In the lead up to it, that you think maybe like there was a light bulb moment, just suddenly everything clicked?
I don't think I changed anything. I definitely trained very, very hard for it. I didn't miss any sessions. I have the sort of mind that I get bored very quickly. So if I am in the gym for an hour and 45 minutes, I'm like, oh, I'll do that another day. It's fine. Like accessory and stuff. On the lead up to Open Nationals, I did not miss a day. I did not miss one accessory. So probably I put my mind into it deeper for Open Nationals, and obviously it paid off.
Yeah.
So
and absolutely. And I think that's a big thing as well. It's that delayed gratification of in this moment, I would rather be anywhere else here than doing these overhead tricep extensions or leg extensions or whatever, Bulgarian split squats. But I know this is ultimately going to add to what I want. And then you had a phenomenal day at Open Nationals. Do you remember what you finished on total wise?
4:55.
That was Open Nationals and then Junior Nationals.
I think it was 4:37 or something like that, or 4:40.
Okay. Still incredible totals for an under 63 kilo lifter. But you did extremely well in both meets. But this is probably the point that most people are going to tune in for us to talk about. You did extremely well at Junior Nationals. I believe you were first, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I believe same at Open Nationals.
Yeah.
So the moral of the story so far is Jody's highly competitive, puts the work in, and it pays off with a lot of big fat W's, a lot of medals. You've done extremely well in your powerlifting career, but this is kind of was a bit of a turning point then. So talk me through the series of events from finishing Junior Nationals, you were chosen to be tested.
Yeah.
Talk us through what happened.
So on the day, I normally drink caffeinated energy drinks. Monster normally. So I was drinking it on the day. It was upsetting my stomach. So I was offered a pre-workout. I never really usually take pre-workout. I normally don't need it. Monster's enough for me. But just in this case, it was making me feel sick. So decided to take the pre-workout. Everything was checked on the pre-workout, and it was an Irish meet. So everybody's in the chance of getting tested. So that was the last thing in my head, that there could have been something in this. But checked it anyway. Nothing was in it. Safe to use. Took that. Then got chosen to get tested at the end, which was fine. I've been tested multiple times before. I actually remember joking around with my friend afterwards. And I was like, imagine there was something in this. There was. Couple of weeks afterwards, got a phone call from Jay. I didn't even see the email. I got a phone call from Jay to check my emails, and I tested positive for DMAA, which is a stimulant. First of all, didn't really know where it came from. The pre-workout didn't really pop into my head. Jay was asking me to check if I had taken any sort of nasal medications. And I actually did. I had an antibiotic for nosebleeds the week before. So I was like, right, it has to be in this. And if it's in this, great, I can get a TUE and that's it, done. Went to the pharmacist. It wasn't in it. I was like, where is this came from? Mm-hmm. I don't know where this came from. Then it clicked in my head. It's going to be in that pre-workout, I bet. So spent an hour and a half researching this pre-workout to find out that there was a substance called DMHA that was found in it. DMHA is very closely linked to DMAA, which is what I tested positive for. So 99.9% sure that it came from that pre-workout. So then everything started with solicitors and writing case letters back to the IPF. They originally said that I was going to get 2 years. So I was obviously going to put a fight up because there was no chance I was stepping away from the sport for 2 years. I would have happily taken a couple of months just to learn my lesson. I'll not do that again. I'll not take anything from anybody. I'll make sure I check it fully. And even the fact that I was still a junior, I was so new to the sport. It was given to me. It wasn't my own pre-workout. It wasn't listed correctly on the back of the label. It proves that I didn't do it intentionally. Mm-hmm. I 100% didn't do it intentionally. Plus, it's not a PED. So I was like, right, it'll only be a couple of months, if even. Maybe a slap on the wrist, who knows. And most people who were involved within this whole case, they were like, don't worry about it, Jodie, it's fine. Like, there's people before that this has happened to and they've only got a couple of months, or else they've just been told off, don't do it again. So I actually wasn't that worried about it at the start. And then it lasted ages. So I got the first email at the end of April to say that I had tested positive. I don't think it was actually fully resolved and cemented that I was getting banned until the end of July. So it was that long period where I was like, I don't know what's going to happen here. So anyway, wrote the first letter. All those things that I just said before, they were all on the letter. They came back to me, didn't try hard enough. Sorry, 24 months. And I was like, no. I have so much evidence here to back up my statement and why this was not intentional and I shouldn't be banned for this long. So then they very generously took 2 months off and gave me 22 months. So yes, I am banned for 22 months for taking a pre-workout.
So just to be clear, because again, I know there's going to be people that are listening, you know as well, that want to know more about this case and exactly what happened. During this time, you're actively communicating. When you say IPF, I assume you mean International Powerlifting Federation. Yeah. You're not communicating with the domestic Irish PF. It's a whole other committee you're talking to when it comes to this. They're a whole other governing body. So just for everybody listening, it's not the people you see at the meets, the regional level meets that Jody's talking about. This is the International Powerlifting Federation working directly with WADA. And then turning the clock back to that moment at Junior Nationals. So, and everyone's clear, you normally drink monster drinks.
Yeah.
As most people do.
Yeah.
I've been in that same boat as you, where I've been drinking monsters, trying to get a bit of a buzz before I go to lift. And I've had that where I get like the stodgy belly, especially if you've cut any kind of weight coming into the meet. It can hit the stomach a little hard. So I'll actually tell you, Beck Phillips, who I had on the podcast, put me onto like these little pre-workout shots.
Oh yeah, I've seen them.
So that's what I've tried to use now. It's same caffeine, but just in much smaller liquid form for that reason. But obviously you were somebody just turned and said, here's this. This was already checked. I checked all the ingredients. And to be clear, the ingredients as they are listed on the label do not come up on the WADA prohibited list.
No.
They do not appear in the prohibited list as they are listed on the ingredients. And then even as you mentioned, what you tested for was DMHA.
No.
DMAA.
Which
is closely related to DMHA.
Yep.
But I believe on the label, it's not actually, neither of those things are listed. It's listed as something else, some kind of extract, I think. So there was no real way without like, extensive research in that moment that you could have possibly known, or perhaps the person that offered this, you could have potentially known that this was the case. And I think anyone listening and with reasonable doubt would say, okay, made a mistake. So we have to say, what is, and look, let's be honest, when we're talking about performance enhancing, if you were totaling 455 6 weeks ago, and in the meet you're getting the slap on the wrist here, and you total less, obviously it didn't have this magnificent skyrocketing effect on your performance. And you've been tested multiple times, and obviously every time everything's been fine.
Yeah.
To then be faced with 22-month ban from the sport, and that's at all competition levels. You can't compete regional, national, or international.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the end date on your ban currently?
February 2025.
Okay, so for everybody listening, consider that Jody has not been able to compete since April,
mm-hmm.
and is expected to not be able to compete for over another year.
Yes.
Which to me is outrageous. Like, one of the main reasons I wanted to actually have you on was, firstly, so you can talk through this process and what way it was handled from your side, but also for me to vocalize my support for you. And that is the most ham-fisted way to handle such a really easily resolved case. Such an easily resolved case. And I think anybody that is familiar with the dedication you have to the sport and how much you've put into it, and the fact that this is very clearly and very obviously a one-off mistake, can really empathize with the fact that the International Powerlifting Federation handle this like, for lack of a better word, fucking morons.
Yeah.
And I think most people can empathize with that. So it's not quite that cut and dry though. What has happened since? Like, so what has life looked like since? Because here's this sport you were excelling in. What has happened in the past, since April to now in December?
The past few months have been grand. But when I first got the letter to say that I tested positive, I was like, I'm done. I'm over. I actually didn't like the sport for a couple of months, simply because of the way they handled the situation. It really put me off. I was like, why do I want to compete in a federation that have treated me so badly?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go, I'm going to go do CrossFit. Mm-hmm. Going to go do something else. But I do really love powerlifting. So I had in the back of my head that I was going to continue training anyway, but I kept it really, really quiet. Didn't really speak about it until it was officially made public in July time. Didn't really want to speak about it, to be honest. I felt like it wasn't really anybody else's business, and there was always going to be those people who they see that somebody's tested positive and they automatically think that they're on steroids or some sort of gear.
Mm-hmm.
I was not. And now that I'm not over it, but now that I can freely talk about it, I want to express the fact that I was not mm-hmm. on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, training hasn't really changed in a way. Obviously, I was coached by Marty Cummings. He is now not allowed to coach me while he's still a IPF member.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Not the end of the world. But there's been a lot of different accusations being made, especially with the sort of Northern Side Federation.
Mm-hmm.
They, very harmful accusations actually, you know, trying to ban me from the gym that I train out of with all my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I get to see them once or twice a week. They were trying to stop me from going up there. So I actually did. I didn't train in Reform for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
While this was all going on, they never came directly to me to say any of this. It was all through third party emails, and it was obviously referred on to me to say, "Oh, sorry, Jody, like you can't come to Reform this week." And I'm like, well, "Why haven't they just came to me directly to let me know?" So they were proven wrong in that situation. There is no rule to say that a federation is allowed to tell me where I'm allowed to train and where I'm not allowed to train. Mm-hmm. So I am allowed to train in Reform. So that was one wrong accusation they made. And obviously, see that 6 weeks that I wasn't training in Reform, training by yourself in a gym where there's no other powerlifters, it was so boring at first. And second of all, like it made me really hate the sport. I was like, what is the point of me doing this anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another accusation made that I had violated my ban at a Northern Irish competition. Mm-hmm. I was rubbing udder mint on my boyfriend's back. And actually the welfare officer of the NIPF came up to me and shouted at me in front of 30 people. So they all seen and heard. Obviously, that was quite embarrassing. But I just left it there. I was like, right, I can't do anything right here. Mm-hmm. The IPF then emailed me. They had made an official complaint to the IPF that I had violated my ban, mm-hmm. and that my ban should restart. Mm-hmm. The IPF, the official International Powerlifting Federation, they then emailed me back to say that I didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of nipped in the bud. But there's just so many wee small things that people are like attacking me with now. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like I can't live my normal life anymore. Mm-hmm. Like even other sports and stuff, obviously anything that is controlled by WADA or anything that is a WADA sport, I'm not allowed to compete in or play. Fair enough, no problem. But I think that is so stupid, especially for a sport that isn't professional. Mm-hmm. It's crazy that I am not allowed to go out and play other sports while I'm not allowed to powerlift. Mm-hmm. It's crazy to me, to be honest.
So here's a couple of questions, if you don't mind. Just so it's clear for everybody listening at home, when you received your ban for 22 months, taking a pre-workout, this was from the International Powerlifting Federation.
Yes. Okay.
So this wasn't put on you by the Irish PF or the NIPF. This was the International Powerlifting Federation. But you're saying that domestically, where you live at home, the NIPF, who did not issue the ban, were trying to impact where you can train and that you whether or not you could attend competitions to support your significant other.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to say that out loud because that is very bizarre to me. And only for the International Powerlifting Federation to tell you that you aren't actually in breach of your ban for whatever the NIPF were trying to say. Okay, that's just very bizarre. And the reason I want to highlight this is because, like you said, this was made public in July, I believe, was it on the RHPF website? Did it go up? I can't remember.
Possibly.
So I know that they officially, I know it officially has to be made public when somebody faces some kind of a ban. But I can't remember as in any case, you know it went public around July, which is fair enough, right? But this is a way for us to be able to tidy up the perception of what potentially happened. So this is all over. Fucking powdery pre-workout, I assume, that was mixed in with some water or something. This is something you can buy off the shelf in like a discount supplements in a Body First Nutrition, whatever. But then domestically, one of the federations where you live is for some reason have taken exception to you. So for me personally, I think that is very bizarre behavior, particularly when, like, look, you have to eat the ban, right? So we're in that position now. But I think it stands to you and your character that you still want to be around the sport and support the sport and still participate in the sport. Because for anyone listening, powerlifting, when you know you can't compete for 22 months, is a drag, you know what I mean? So I think it speaks volumes to your dedication to the sport and to the people in it that you would want to even, I'd imagine as well for you, it probably isn't the most comfortable thing to have to walk back into a competition venue knowing that you can't lift. So for somebody, was it the doping control officer you said, or somebody at one of the
welfare
control shouted at you?
Yes.
Is this a man or a woman? Sorry.
A man.
Raised his voice to you?
Yep.
Okay. Couldn't just quietly ask you?
No.
Exceptional, amazing. So I hope it's plain in my tone for anybody listening. Like, that is completely unacceptable behavior, and I think a very poor representation of the sport. And I think most people listening will be firmly in your camp to say that, like, this, look, whatever about the fact that you've received the ban, but I don't think they need to treat you less than human. And you said it yourself, they've for some reason decided to make your life that little bit harder at the moment. So how are things for you currently?
Right now, great. I am hoping to get back onto a platform in February. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? I'm just chilling now until Christmas. I'm enjoying training. I always enjoy training. So I'm just chilling now until Christmas. And then come the new year, I'm excited to get back into peaking and lifting heavy, heavy stuff again. Although, like, even, see, just to spice my training up, I like to do the odd wee max out day. Obviously, because I haven't competed since April, I decided that I was going to do a max out day a few weeks ago. Can't remember when it was, but a few weeks ago anyway. Set a few PBs. Now I've got a different, like, end goal in my head because of different PBs that I've set and stuff. So things like that, just, they kept me on track. And it was like a competition day a few weeks ago, squat, bench, deadlift, just see how heavy I can go. So I'm excited. I'm excited for 2024, to be honest. I'm really, really excited to get back into competition head, competition brain. I haven't tracked food since April, so I'm excited for to be a bit more regimented with training.
Re-engage your athlete brain.
Yeah.
I've actually seen a lot of your, particularly with your deadlift clips, like, things are moving quite well. I think people are going to be in trouble now coming into the new year. But I didn't actually realize, didn't know if we were going to talk about the competition in February. But I mean, if you want to talk about it, I'm absolutely happy to hear what you have to say about what's happening in 2024.
Well, I think it's common knowledge to everybody now that USAPL Ireland is, is the Irish federations across Ireland, is that part of the European tour?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's going to be different competitions, obviously, in the different provinces. So I'm hoping to do a couple of those competitions to be a part of this new federation that's coming to Ireland and obviously different parts of Europe. You know what? I'm excited for it. It seems like they're the three boys that are controlling this and creating this. They seem to be putting a lot of hard work into it. And if it's Jay that's sort of the head of it, he is going to be making a serious dent in this. It's going to be good. And I am excited for it. A lot of people are a bit weary. You know, it's a brand new thing for Ireland. It's not going to be as busy. It's not going to be as maybe high a standard. Who knows? Hopefully it will be. But I think a lot of people are very wary just because they haven't seen it before. They don't know what to expect from it. But I'm quite happy to help and be a part of starting this new federation up and hopefully growing it to the same standard as the IPF at the minute.
Blaze the trail. Be one of the early adopters. And I think as well, it would be a disservice for everyone to consider that you couldn't be back on a platform till February 2025 because, you know, you've done excellent things in the competitions you've been able to have till now. So the idea of not seeing you on the platform for another year and a bit is ridiculous. So this is a fantastic way for you to be able to return to competing to a high standard, very similar rule book and a tested meet. So maybe people listen and don't understand this, but the International Powerlifting Federation and all its subsidiaries, the NIPF, the Irish PF, are tested by WADA, whereas USAPL uses its own labs. And they actually do, they test more. They test 10% of the lifter base at every single competition, and that's going to be upheld here as well. Have you seen the venue for the February meet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So things are looking pretty good. And I think it's excellent to be able to say that, you know, Jody Stevens will be back on a platform in February 2024. So a whole year earlier than we might have potentially seen, which is, it's huge. It's amazing. And very excited to see what you can bring. Because as you said, like, we don't know yet what next year is going to hold. We don't know what it means for powerlifting in Ireland, that we have these extra competitions. We have this whole separate side to tested meets, but it could potentially be huge. And as you mentioned, I'm not sure if it's been officially announced, but the final to the Euro Cup the Euro Tour is going to be here. So this is a way for people to put up those qualifying numbers to be the person to represent Ireland in those weight classes. So I'd imagine we're probably going to see you compete more than once next year.
I hope so.
I would imagine so. But outside of that then, and these experiences, has it changed anything about your perception of powerlifting or the International Powerlifting Federation? What would this, like, again, I know it's still relatively, it hasn't even been a year yet. Where does this leave you for now?
I'm not sure if I would make a return to the IPF, to be honest. I don't like how they handled the situation. I feel like it was very automated. They didn't really take any of my points into consideration. So I don't really want to lift for a federation who treated me like that. So I don't know if I would make a return to the IPF. I think I might just jump straight into USAPL. Sure, you get a ban for a year anyway, so.
May as well get another one.
You may as well. So I think I will put my heart and soul into USAPL for now. See how that turns out. Who knows? I also have many aspirations to go traveling and see the world. So when I first got received the news of my ban, I was like, right, this is the perfect opportunity for me to do my traveling. But you know what? It's actually gone quite fast since April. It's gone very, very fast. It's almost Christmas. So I want to do USAPL first before I make any sort of decisions. Plus, there's USAPL competitions everywhere in the world. Everywhere, Australia, which is a place that I would love to visit. So there's nothing to say that if I do go traveling, I can't compete. I definitely could still compete. But my life isn't just powerlifting. I have many other aspirations of what I want to achieve in my life.
You know, it's actually one of the things I was going to say when you mentioned how quickly the time went. I think every time I've clicked on your Instagram page, you're always doing something different or somewhere new. So it's your life is still very, very full outside of the scope of this sport. And as you said, even if you do go traveling, there's going to be competitions everywhere that you can compete in. And it's probably worth noting as well, it's only the IPF that don't let people compete with other federations. So realistically, you could compete anywhere, which brings me to another question. Could we see Jodie Stephen at the AB Series?
Yeah. Well, I had signed up to do the under 23s in November just past, but I couldn't do it this year. I just think with the ban and stuff, I think possibly next year, I think I'll be able to, but see the difference between the ABS competitions and the usual Irish competitions. Like the Irish competitions are great, don't get me wrong. But the ABS competitions, they are just, they're a whole new level. They look fun. The spectators actually, I would say they probably prefer watching the likes of an ABS series to an Irish. And like, I am not dissing Irish competitions. They are great. They're so much fun.
Oh, they are, yeah.
But fire breathers, loud music, commentators, it's, I think they're better in a way.
It's a spectacle.
I don't really know how to explain it, but they seem like they're more fun.
I think this conversation has come up on the podcast before, and I think sometimes people take exception to it as if they're trying to say Irish PF is not fun. Irish PF is great. Yeah. Irish PF is a huge step above most other tested meets in terms of like how the crowd interact, the crowd noise. And I think that's just the Irish in the crowd. We're a rowdy bunch. We like making noise. We like cheering and shouting. I think the presentation at venues is good. The banners are always very good. The warm-up rooms are ran very efficiently. And I think the spotters and loaders are very, very good. And they always, give the lifters encouragement when they're out there. And so it's like, I would put like the Irish PF above almost every other meet. But in the series, it's just this thing in a whole other stratosphere. And it's, you can only appreciate it if you've been at one.
Yeah.
So I would love to see Jodie Stephens jump into an AB series with a deadlift bar and a pair of wraps. See what would happen there. I think that would be ludicrous. Like,
who knows?
I mean, it's all on the books of what could potentially happen. But Jodie, before I let you go, and I don't want to let you go just yet, but I will let you go shortly. If you were to look then beyond this, so beyond this whole experience, and maybe it could be the last time we've seen Jodie Stephens lift in the International Powerlifting Federation. We just don't know yet. The future could be anything. You've dedicated to USAPL Ireland in February and then potentially maybe the Euro finals that will be here. Next year, we could have a whole other world. So we could see 2025, our Team Ireland, USAPL Worlds. Is that something you think you would be down to do?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think it's one of the nice things about powerlifting. It kind of coincides with that. Like you said, you want to see a bit more of the world. Here's a prime way to do it. Is there any places in particular outside of Australia that you want to hit up along the way?
Different parts of Asia, Southeast Asia. I would quite like to travel different parts of America as well. Just more so America for holidays and stuff like that. But I would quite like to settle in Australia or New Zealand. I've heard New Zealand's lovely too. I have a few friends that lived in New Zealand for a wee while and work there probably for a wee while and just live a bit of a different life, to be honest. I do love this country. This country's great. especially more so in the summertime when there's nice weather. It is lovely, but I crave the routine that Australia seems to have, that sort of you work to live, not live to work. I like to go out and enjoy my life. They obviously have a massive fitness. They have a massive fitness. What would you call that? Scene. Cool. Yeah, massive fitness scene.
Yeah.
So I think I would excel over there.
It's like ingrained into a culture. Everyone's fit and active and outside all the time. And I think when you've got sun, sand, beach, you know, and you know, they have to be fit and healthy over there because everything in the water, in the trees and in the grass is trying to kill them. So, you know, huge spiders, huge snakes, whatever they have, it's all in the water, it's all in the land, it's all trying to, good luck if you do land over there. But in any case, what you're saying is enjoy domestic Ireland Jodie Stevens lifting while you can, because you never know. We could see her relocate to the other side of the world.
Who knows?
Jodie, it's been real. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Delighted that we could give Jodie a platform to tell her story. We'll definitely have her back on after we see her back on the powerlifting platform in 2024. Gang, make sure you're following Jodie Stevens over on Instagram and make sure you're subscribed to the podcast on YouTube and here on Spotify.